Hi, Harry. I'm Romilda. Romilda Vane, she said loudly and confidently. Why don't you join us in our compartment? You don't have to sit with them, she added in a stage whisper, indicating Neville's bottom, which was sticking out from under the seat again as he groped around for Trevor, and Luna, who was now wearing her free spectre specs, which gave her the look of a demented, multicoloured owl. They're friends of mine, said Harry coldly.
Oh,
said the girl, looking very surprised.
Oh, okay.
And she withdrew, sliding the door closed behind her.
People expect you to have cooler friends than us,
said Luna, once again displaying her knack for embarrassing honesty. You are cool, said Harry shortly. None of them was at the ministry. They didn't fight with me.
That's a very nice thing to say, beamed Luna.
Then she pushed her spectre specs farther up on her nose and settled down to read the Quibbler.
We didn't face him, though,
said Neville, emerging from under the seat with fluff and dust in his hair and a resigned-looking Trevor in his hand.
You did. You should hear my grand talk about you. That Harry Potter's got more backbone than the whole Ministry of Magic put together. She'd give anything to have you as a grandson.
Harry laughed uncomfortably and changed the subject to OWL results as soon as he could. While Neville recited his grades and wondered aloud whether he would be allowed to take a transfiguration NEWT with only an acceptable, Harry watched him without really listening. Neville's childhood had been blighted by Voldemort just as much as Harry's had, but Neville had no idea how close he had come to having Harry's destiny. The prophecy could have referred to either of them, yet, for his own inscrutable reasons, Voldemort had chosen to believe that Harry was the one meant. Had Voldemort chosen Neville, it would be Neville sitting opposite Harry, bearing the lightning-shaped scar and the weight of the prophecy. Or would it? Would Neville's mother have died to save him, as Lily had died for Harry? Surely she would, but what if she had been unable to stand between her son and Voldemort? Would there then have been no chosen one at all? An empty seat where Neville now sat, and a scarless Harry who would have been kissed goodbye by his own mother, not Ron's?
You all right, Harry? You look funny, said Neville.
Harry started. Sorry, I...
Raxbert got you?
Asked Luna sympathetically, peering at Harry through her enormous coloured spectacles.
What?
A Raxbert. They're invisible. They float in through your ears and make your brain go fuzzy, she said. I thought I felt one zooming around in here.
She flapped her hands at thin air, as though beating off large invisible moths. Harry and Neville caught each other's eyes and hastily began to talk of Quidditch. The weather beyond the train windows was as patchy as it had been all summer. They passed through stretches of the chilling mist, then out into weak, clear sunlight. It was during one of the clear spells, when the sun was visible almost directly overhead, that Ron and Hermione entered the compartment at last.
"Wish the lunch trolley would hurry up, I'm starving,"
said Ron longingly, slumping into the seat beside Harry and rubbing his stomach.
"Hi, Neville. Hi, Luna.
Guess what?"
he added, turning to Harry.
"Malfoy's not doing prefect duty. He's just sitting in his compartment with the other Slytherins. We saw him when we passed."
Harry sat up straight, interested. It was not like Malfoy to pass up the chance to demonstrate his power as prefect, which he had happily abused all the previous year. "What did he do when he saw you?"
"The usual," said Ron indifferently, demonstrating a rude hand gesture. "Not like him, though, is it?"
"Well, that is."
He did the hand gesture again.
"But why isn't he out there bullying first years?"
"Dunno," said Harry, but his mind was racing. Didn't this look as though Malfoy had more important things on his mind than bullying younger students?
"Maybe he preferred the inquisitorial squad," said Hermione. "Maybe being a prefect seems a bit tame after that."
"I don't think so," said Harry.
"I think he's..."
But before he could expound on his theory, the compartment door slid open again and a breathless third-year girl stepped inside.
"I'm supposed to deliver these to Neville Longbottom and Harry Potter,"
she faltered as her eyes met Harry's and she turned scarlet. She was holding out two scrolls of parchment tied with violet ribbon. Perplexed, Harry and Neville took the scroll addressed to each of them, and the girl stumbled back out of the compartment.
"What is it?"
Ron demanded as Harry unrolled his.
"An invitation," said Harry.
"Harry, I would be delighted if you would join me for a bite of lunch in Compartment C. Sincerely, Professor H.E.F. Slughorn."
"Who's Professor Slughorn?"
asked Neville, looking perplexedly at his own invitation.
"New teacher," said Harry.
"Well, I suppose we'll have to go, won't we?"
"But what does he want me for?"
asked Neville nervously, as though he was expecting detention.
"No idea," said Harry, which was not entirely true, though he had no proof yet that his hunch was correct.
"Listen," he added, seized by a sudden brainwave. "Let's go under the invisibility cloak, then we might get a look at Malfoy on the way, see what he's up to."
This idea, however, came to nothing. The corridors, which were packed with people on the lookout for the lunch trolley, were impossible to negotiate while wearing the cloak. Harry stowed it regretfully back in his bag, reflecting that it would have been nice to wear it just to avoid all the staring, which seemed to have increased in intensity even since he had last walked down the train. Every now and then, students would hurtle out of their compartments to get a better look at him. The exception was Cho Chang, who darted into her compartment when she saw Harry coming. As Harry passed the window, he saw her deep in determined conversation with her friend Marietta, who was wearing a very thick layer of makeup that did not entirely obscure the odd formation of pimples still etched across her face. Smirking slightly, Harry pushed on. When they reached Compartment C, they saw at once that they were not Slughorn's only invitees. Although, judging by the enthusiasm of Slughorn's welcome, Harry was the most warmly anticipated.
"Harry, my boy," said Slughorn, jumping up at the sight of him so that his great velvet-covered belly seemed to fill all the remaining space in the compartment.
His shiny bald head and great silvery moustache gleamed as brightly in the sunlight as the golden buttons on his waistcoat.
"Good to see you, good to see you. And you must be Mr. Longbottom."
Neville nodded, looking scared. At a gesture from Slughorn, they sat down opposite each other in the only two empty seats, which were nearest the door. Harry glanced around at their fellow guests. He recognized a Slytherin from their year, a tall black boy with high cheekbones and long slanting eyes. There were also two seventh-year boys Harry did not know, and, squashed in the corner beside Slughorn and looking as though she was not entirely sure how she had got there, Ginny.
"Now, do you know everyone?" Slughorn asked Harry and Neville. "Blaise Zabini is in your year, of course."
Zabini did not make any sign of recognition or greeting, nor did Harry or Neville. Gryffindor and Slytherin students loathed each other on principle,